Welcome to Mission Peak. We hope you enjoy this recording of the sermon from our service, and we hope to see you on Sunday morning. Thanks for listening.
When I was a little boy, I was a sensitive kid, full of lots of emotions. I cried a lot, and not because I wasn't happy. I had a pretty happy childhood, but I think like so many children, I was naturally empathic. I naturally would see someone in pain, and I would just feel that pain. And sometimes, often, it would lead to tears. I think that's how a lot of kids are, naturally. Well, among many things I was as a kid, I was also a little bit of an entrepreneur. I don't know if that surprises you, but I was. And one of the many ways that expressed itself was when I got to junior high and I got my lunch money, finally had some lunch money, a couple bucks to get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I would buy a couple sodas on the way to school. They'd be like 35 cents or something, if you can remember that. And then I'd resell them at school for like 75 cents. So I could get my peanut butter and jelly sandwich with my milk, and then after school I could still have a little bit of money for a snack. So one day I had done this. It was early, a couple months into seventh grade, and had my sodas. I had gotten through the first bit of school and headed down to the cafeteria with my sodas in hand and bumped right into the school bully. We'll call him Adam because that was his name. And I had done a good job of avoiding him for the first couple months because, I wasn't really looking to run into the school bully, but I didn't have a choice. There it had happened. And he knocked me to the ground and called me some names about how I was a wuss and took my sodas. He took my sodas. And there I was on the ground and feeling a lot of emotions. I was pretty confused. I'm not a fighter. I never have been. But I felt a lot of shame. Helpless, powerless. Anyone who's been bullied knows what that feeling is like. And I could feel all that welling up in me, and so I got as quick as I could out of there, and I went into the bathroom. Started crying, just letting the tears flow. And after a minute or two of that, I heard a noise that you shouldn't hear in the boys' room, which is a girl's voice. Someone who I had gone to elementary school with, who had matriculated with me to that same junior high, had followed me in there and wanted to check on me. That was really nice. A couple other people joined her, and I knew that they were there to support me, but I felt so much shame. That was really the feeling that I was just overwhelmed with. And I remember, it didn't happen in that exact moment, but in that time period, deciding to be a man. As I was growing into, I had to stop crying. I couldn't cry anymore. I wasn't a boy. And I remember in my body learning how to just kind of shut it down. Shove it down there somewhere. And tears aren't just water. It's the language of the soul, maybe, or something. And when you turn off the tears, a whole lot of stuff gets messed up in you. And it took me a while. My emotions got all welled up and got a wall built around them so I could do that. Not a healthy thing. But this is what gender stereotypes do to us. They make us try to be someone we're not. As that song said, we were born some way special. And run into all this stuff out here in the world about how we're supposed to be. It gets all messed up. So I'm going to talk a little bit about gender stereotypes, and here they are in just total relief. We got the big beefy masculine man ready to be our hero, and the woman's at home taking care of way too many kids. So that's what we're going to talk about. And for me, a lot of that journey really started about crying. It's really where the journey about learning about all this started. And one thing that I came to learn was it hasn't always been this way, and this is always true with gender stereotypes. That's the amazing thing, is they're so fake, they're so not real, they get changed all the time by the people who need to make them certain ways, okay? So let's talk about crying for a moment. This guy, maybe we can get the lights turned off in the back, Terry, and someone over there. Doug, this is Odysseus. Anyone remember him from Greek mythology? Warrior. He's a warrior. And he's a guy who put his sword in the Cyclops' eye. That's what's going on there. Blinded the Cyclops. He was one of the heroes of the Trojan War. He would cry all the time. Because in that culture, part of being masculine was that you understood the awesomeness of what it meant to go to battle, and you wept about that, because that's how you showed that you got it, that you cared enough. That was a part of masculinity at that time. And it wasn't just in ancient Greece that this was true either. Through the Middle Ages, in other cultures, in Japanese culture, samurais openly wept for the same reason. Beowulf in our European literature weeps in that book. The strong man. Strong men wept all the time. And then up until the 19th century, until we started getting more and more removed from war. You can really see that as we get war something that we can drop a bomb on people far away and you don't have that same personal connection to it. It started to be a masculine trait to not cry anymore. It was weak. It was feminine to cry. None of these things are built permanently. They are constructed. Every single one of them. Okay? For hundreds of years, this is what we put our kids in. White outfits. Because guess what? Kids poop and pee in that stuff a lot. I can attest to that. And the easiest thing to do is bleach them white again. So, kids wore white. Everyone wore white. Well, then in the 1910s, people started catalog merchandising, and they wanted to kind of, you know, sell stuff to us. And they learned that pink was for... Wrong. Boys. Pink was for boys, and blue was for girls. Because, and it's hard for our eyes to even imagine this, but let me just read from this Ladies' Home Journal article, June 1918. The generally accepted rule is pink for the boys and blue for the girls. The reason is that pink, being a more decided and stronger color, is more suitable for the boy, while blue, which is more delicate and daintier, is prettier for the girl. Okay? This is all constructed. All constructed. When we look at that, all we can imagine is a girl's going in that one and a boy's going in that one. But if you had shown this 100 years ago, they'd be like, PowerPoint, that's incredible. Then they think everything was backwards, just like we did. And for a while it got a little chaotic because the merchants were kind of competing, and so this is actually a picture of a Time magazine article from 1927 to show which merchants thought which gender should go in what colored clothing, okay? So if you were in Cleveland at Hal's, pink was for boys, but if you were in Philadelphia at John Wanamaker, blue was for boys. Wasn't set at all. It's from 1927. And in the 40s, eventually, the manufacturers got together and they just decided. It was manufacturers that decided this, okay? That blue is for boys and pink is for girls, and that's why we all think that. Now, a strange thing happened. You might have heard of this women's liberation thing. Kind of took hold in the 60s and 70s. Well, an amazing thing happened is women started to make more decisions and take more power back. They thought this was kind of a big mess. And neutral clothing became what you put your kids in. Greens and yellows. Stay away from that blue and pink thing. But then guess what happened again? We started to learn how to take pictures in our bellies and find out if you're having a boy or girl. And the merchants realized if they could resync this stuff, your family would go out and get a whole set of pink everything when they found out you had a girl. So we went back to pink and blue again. We're moving back to the neutral colors again. None of this stuff is set. It just changes. We can believe in it or not. We can be controlled by it or not. And it wasn't just limited to colors, too. You can see those patent leather boots on this kid in the skirt. So that is the guy on the left, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Yeah. You used to wear skirts and nice long boots and That's a boy. That's how you dress a boy. Yeah. You might not want to do that because I wouldn't want my kid to grow up to be president, but, choice is up to you. Choice is up to you. So I'm going to go another place where stereotypically I should not go. So, for a long, 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 long time, men have tried to tell women when they were being irrational. And that it wasn't their fault. Something else is going on, right? So, amazingly, this guy, Hippocrates, someone want to give me a pronunciation on him? Hippocrates of the Greeks. He believed that women were irrational because their uterus fell out of place. And this is his words, not mine. It must be pushed back into place by vigorous sex. This is what the ancient Greeks believed. Just quote the ancient Greeks, people. When sex came to be considered more of a sin with the rise of Christianity, these irrational bursts of anger started to get blamed on having too much sex. By the late 18th century, it was considered a side effect of going too long without getting pregnant. Now, we've had a lot of research on this cycle, and if you don't tell people what you're studying, you can't find any correlation between any kind of emotional behavior and the 30-day cycle. And there are scientists who have also pegged it all over the place, but in lots of different places. Okay? This is another created gender stereotype. Men have same similar hormonal cycles. Men are a little irrational times too. Yeah, we know that. So gender stereotypes are not only extraordinarily powerful, but they're based on nothing real, and they have all that power still. That's kind of the scariest part of the whole story. So what does it all mean, right? We have these labels we put on people. I'm a punk, I must rebel. I'm Asian, so I must like math. I dye my hair crazy colors, so I must be looking for attention. I'm a person, so I must be stereotyped. And these stereotypes become imprisoning. They become imprisoning. We stop seeing people for who they are, truly, like the stereotype wall we did earlier. And not only do we stop seeing other people the way they truly are, but we stop allowing ourselves to be who we truly are put on this earth to be. For whatever reason you think we were put here, it had nothing to do with any of this. It had nothing to do with merchandisers wanting you to buy a new set of pink clothes for your kids. You see, in Unitarian Universalism, we don't believe in a devil like some physical being somewhere who's pulling the puppet strings to make evil happen. What we think is that structures and systems that are humanly created, they keep people in bondage, wordlessly and namelessly. And every single one, it's not someone else that's doing this to us, it's every single one of us and everyone else that holds all those, because how easy was it for us to talk about the stereotypes of classic music and punk? And it would have been even easier if we brought other groups up here. This stuff lives in every single one of us. So it's not about pretending this isn't there. It's all in us. It's about acknowledging it, completely acknowledging it, naming it, saying that stuff, and then saying, I'm going to leave that over there. I'm going to try to see you just like you are. I'm going to try to let myself be just who I am. That's what we're trying to do here at Mission Peak. Trying to break this stuff down. One little bit at a time. And quite frankly, I'm honored to be doing it with you. That's our mission. That's our mission. To help people get free from this stuff. May we continue to walk that journey together. May it be so.